Welcome to Conestoga 10, podcast number 10 for June 20th, 2006. Conestoga is Oklahoma's largest literary science fiction and fantasy convention. It will be held July 28th through the 30th, 2006 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We are celebrating 10 years of Conestoga, Misha Marlin Publishing, and Yard Dog Press. In Program 1, we brought you an interview with Katie Wentworth, one of the co-founders of Conestoga. Our other co-founder is Randy Ferran, and perhaps someday we'll get him on a podcast as well. In our fifth program, we brought you Lynn Stranathan and Selena Rosen of Yard Dog Press. Now we bring you our final co-celebrant of Conestoga 10-10-10, Steve Pagel, co-founder of Misha Merlin Publishing. Before getting started, I wanted to remind our listeners that our guest of honor this year is David Drake. Our artist guest of honor is Don Mates, and his wife, Jenny Wirtz, will be a guest as well. Our Toastmaster is Robin Wayne Bailey, who incidentally was our first Toastmaster as well. Our fan guests of honor are Lynn Stranathan and Selena Rosen. And we have a late edition special guest, James P. Hogan, who hasn't been here since the days of Ocon. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. We have a truly diverse and talented group of authors and artists attending this year. Look at our guest page on the Conestoga website, www.sftulsa.org, for the lineup. Now, without further ado, Steve Pagel. This evening I have Steve Pagel of Misha Merlin Publishing, and he is one of the three co-celebrants for Conestoga 10, along with Yard Dog Press and, of course, Conestoga. Thanks for coming this evening, or joining me here, allowing me to come here to interview you.
Thanks, no problem.
Well, one of the things, because this is your 10th year, what I'd like to do is ask you a couple of questions about how did Misha Merlin get started?
Oh, boy, short form, Misha Merlin getting started. My business partner, Kevin Murphy, who is an award-winning artist within the field and actually a major artist outside the field. He's done work with Lucasfilms, National Geographic, the Rolling Stones, the group and everything. We got talking at a bar one night with a bunch of people on creating an independent press that was different in a lot of ways than current publishing. And then some people brought it back up later and said they thought it was a great idea. Kevin and I kicked it around and essentially then in 96 incorporated and put everything together to launch Misha Merlin and had our first books coming out in 97.
Well, so when you said an independent press, that's different. What is different about Misha Merlin than, say, some of the other publishers?
First of all, when we initially started the publishing house, our goal was to eventually be able to compete one-on-one with the New York houses on shelf space at Barnes & Noble, Borders, Amazon, everywhere around the world. So we initially started out under the concept that this would be a independent publishing house rather than in some ways a small press, and that we would be paying ourselves salaries, other people's salaries, and like I said, be at such a level that we could compete against New York for shelf space across the world. It's different from New York. Small things, artists and authors are allowed to talk to each other. We do a acid-free, fully bonded paper, which is an archival paper of 200 years. Our covers are fully laminated. They're completely UV-coated. We do the old-fashioned Smythe sewing. So we actually create a book, whether it's a softcover trade or hardcover, that's made to last essentially for hundreds of years, rather than creating slightly disposable books.
Well, I'm glad they're very high quality, and that gives people a chance to read them over and over again.
Yes.
Since that was your plan as an independent publisher, how has that worked out? How has that played out over these past 10 years?
Of course, cracking into Amazon was the easiest because they have a lot of openings, and they will look at everything. We've worked with a couple of distributors throughout the years, some okay, some not so okay. Some that would forget to pay us for months on a time. Right now, at this time and space, we are in our second year of being distributed by Diamond Books, which is a subdivision of Diamond Comics, which is the largest distributor out there in the world. And we are currently, essentially at this point in time, have reached the goal of we have full universal distribution, whether it's the PXs overseas on Air Force, Naval, Army bases, all the major chain independent stores here in the States, Canada, Australia. We currently have an agent representing 17 countries and have our books translated into foreign languages all over the world. So we just began to really realize to be where we wanted to be over, I'll say probably the past year or so. We began to reach that goal of being essentially possible being everywhere.
Well, that's excellent. I guess you do have something, you do have some reasons to celebrate at for your 10th anniversary. What are some of the activities that you have planned at Conestoga?
Well, I know that, well, of course, I mean, Selena's going to be there. Jannie Wirtz is coming in, Don Mates. In fact, Don is, I believe, artist guest of honor. And we're planning to have as many of our authors that we can that are going to be there. Friday night, we have a big party. For the first time in the history of the company, one of the things that we have never, ever done at conventions is just do across-the-board discounts. Mainly because a lot of places that do that, their business is slow during the first couple of days of the convention. They do all their business on Sunday when they discount everything. At Conestoga, it's a 10-year anniversary. We'll be straight across the board, a 10% discount on everything for the entire weekend. So it'll be a good chance for people to save money, take a look on books, and we'll be running some other specials off and on throughout the weekend. I said the major thing, we have the big party on Friday night, and then Selena and I are still kicking around some co-things that we plan to do.
Well, we'll keep people posted on the website for that information. Or maybe we'll just let it be a surprise.
Yeah, because there's still certain authors that are down to the last minute that aren't really sure. Of course, we'll be premiering a brand new Selena Rosen book at the convention. We'll be receiving it about 3 days before the convention, so it will not even be into stores or anywhere at that time.
Oh, so it's going to be an exclusive debut of the book then.
Right.
Oh, excellent.
Yep.
We've got a lot planned for Conestoga 10-10-10, along with, you know, Misha Merlin and of course, Yard Dog Press. You're going to be celebrating your 10 years. Now, the thing is that before you got into becoming a public, before you became a publishing magnate, what did you do in your previous occupation?
What pretty much led up to Misha Merlin is, I said, it was started by Kevin Murphy and I, and under a simple division. I control everything inside the book. Kevin mm-hmm. controls everything outside the book. Myself, the major things is I was with Barnes & Noble for almost a full decade, and I spent 3.5 of those years as their national buyer, controlled 35 to 37% of everything sold in this country as far as science fiction and fantasy. I was with White Wolf as their director of sales for the chain stores. Also with Nicola Griffith, I co-edited the Bending the Landscape anthology series. It was three different books. I believe altogether we had 10 or 11 award nominations, and we won 7 of those. So I was involved in a lot of different aspects of publishing. Kevin, like I said, is a World Fantasy Award-winning artist. He also had done work, like I said, with National Geographic, Lucasfilms. He beat out thousands of other artists to do the Bridges to Babylon CD cover for the Rolling Stones. So he knew a lot about the art and the outside of the book, which is why when we really got together, we encompassed and made the whole thing click on both sides, because we had a lot of actual experience in the business world, where a lot of people sometimes that create small publishing or small presses do not have that background business experience. They understand reading and they enjoy the authors and the conventions. They don't understand the business aspect, which can be deadly.
Well, yeah, I can certainly understand that. One of the things I have noticed over the years that publishing has changed tremendously, not just the advent of the internet, but also the fact that books just, especially paperbacks, don't seem to last on the shelves for very long. They actually have a very short shelf life. And I know you do the higher quality books. Now, those tend to have a higher, a longer shelf life.
Well, they have a longer shelf life. And also, we do smaller print runs and do reprints. I mean, way back, and I don't remember the exact year that the Thorsen Gunnarsson, the Tax Act was updated. But when it included books, one of the things they did is, since books are returnable, and they don't know exactly which books were on the publisher's warehouse, were there last year. A publisher is taxed every year on all the books in their warehouse. So if you carry a book across 2 years, you actually are the only business that gets double taxed, 3 years triple taxed, etc., which is why books disappear a lot. Publishers, if you carry a book for more than a year or two, the exact same physical book, your taxes make your profits go away. So you have to get into making smaller print runs, doing them faster, and getting them out there. Besides our books, since we do a higher quality books, mm-hmm. they do stand up on the shelf more. There are less returns due to damages. And like I said, overseas libraries very much enjoy the books because of the high quality of the book.
Well, yeah, because what I was getting at, because some of our listeners may not be aware of how the history of publishing evolved, but also the history of books, in that it takes time to develop a readership, because a lot of times it's word of mouth. And so the current business model has been you know, counter to the way books, you know, how people buy books.
Well, it used to be also that a lot of the books sold to fandom, and at one point in time, fandom could support publishing houses. Today, I mean, like in the 80s, there was maybe 50 books a month released. Today, you probably have between 120 to maybe 140 books a month released. There's no way a person can read every book that comes out each month. And therefore, a lot of the major New York houses have high overhead, large expenses. They have to reach outside of fandom, and they just try to do books in a sort of a, at times, shotgun approach, where you take a book out, you toss it out there. If it does good, you do more. If it doesn't, you forget about it, and you go on to the next one. They don't always have the time and energy or staff to build authors anymore. And that's where Yard Dog and we come in a lot, because we do have that time and energy and really the want to build authors.
Well, that's excellent. I'm very glad that you and Selena are in business putting out those quality books that other people otherwise wouldn't have a chance to buy and read.
Well, we've both had authors that we have started with that New York houses have come down the line and picked up from us and are now publishing themselves because we built them up to a stage. And let's face it, they can still walk in and offer either one of us. They can offer an author 10 times the amount of money we can offer them still at this current stage.
Well, I think we're going to move on for a little bit here because I kind of wanted to ask you, because I've heard some of your stories you tell about being a buyer for Barnes & Noble. Is there any particular story that you love to tell?
Probably the basic philosophy, I mean, that I risked a lot on was with Virtual Light by William Gibson, and the fact that really worked with Bantam and at times pushed with them because they had set the groundwork, and I didn't think they really understood how wide they had set the groundwork and how popular that book would be. And through working very closely with them, was able to make that an actually New York Times bestseller for Gibson, which until that time was his first New York Times bestselling book. And those are the kind of things that are really that I enjoy doing. You know, helping promote someone that is already at a certain level is cool, but taking someone that's at a particular level and being able to move them up extravagantly to a new level is what I very much enjoy. Or finding a new author and creating that niche and finding their readers and putting all that together, that's what I also really enjoy. One of the good things is also, I'm going to say, that's happened recently over about the past year and a half is sort of a, I'm going to call it a backward trend, in that there are authors like Jani Wirtz, who worked at a New York house that's now exclusively with us, or Susan Matthews, that was exclusively with New York, is now with us. Mike Resnick, and then recently David Coe is doing a brand new series with us. So we are now also in a position where there are times that we've been able to move authors from a New York house back over to us. And that's a very nice trend to be seeing happening.
I guess one of the other questions I also have is that, you know, over the past 10 years, the internet has just grown explosively, especially with Amazon. Where do most of your books go? Do you get most of them sold over the internet with various houses, or, you know, traditional brick and mortar stores?
Oh, no. You still traditionally, B&N and Borders dominates the book market. I don't know in all genres, but still basically in SF. Between the two of them, they can move about, on average, about 60% of any book released. So they still definitely, between the two of them, dominate the market. Though certain places move in, Amazon, and lesser-known authors can do much better because people are willing to take a chance, and they can get anyone, like I said, can go on Amazon from around the world. But they haven't quite reached the point of, I said, you know, dominating the market yet.
Well, I think that just about covers it. Well, Steve, I want to thank you again for allowing me to interview you, and looking forward to having you come to Conestoga and bringing your whole bevy of authors with you.
Yeah, we'll look forward to about 6 weeks, I think, and then we'll be there.
The publishing industry has changed dramatically over the decades, and creative people like Steve Pagel and Kevin Murphy are among those independent publishers who succeed in this era of conglomerate publishing. Conestoga wishes further success to not only Misha Merlin, but Yard Dog Press as well, and that all three entities will be around to celebrate 20 years. We hope that you've enjoyed the Conestoga podcast series so far, but we plan to record more at the event to be released periodically afterwards. Along with more interviews, there will be two podcasting panels. You may be wondering why Conestoga is doing podcasts. Sure, it's trendy, and there have been a lot of internet fads over the previous decade, but this is the fad that caught my attention. Our wonderful programming chair, Melissa Tatum, and I attended our first WorldCon in Glasgow, Scotland last year. This is where we met Paul Fisher and his wife, Martha Holloway. Paul told us about this amazing new thing called podcasting and what he was doing with the Balticon podcast. and I thought podcasting would be a great way to promote our convention as well. I highly recommend that you check out the Balticon podcast. He has a lot of great interviews from Balticon 39, and since Balticon 40 recently took place, he has started to release interviews from it as well. Go to balticonpodcast.org to hear them. Though there are many sci-fi related podcasts, Balticon Podcast was the first science fiction and fantasy convention to do them, and Conestoga is the second. Paul was instrumental in recommending to me what equipment to buy and providing technical advice to help me get set up. When Evoterra's and T. Morris's Podcasting for Dummies appeared on the shelves, I picked up a copy of it, and it helped me fill in all the last little fiddly bits. And thus, the Conestoga podcast was born. I also want to thank Elspeth Bloodgood for agreeing to conduct some of the interviews and to Rex Powell for his lovely rendition of the Old Trism Trail that serves as our theme music. And I'm Chris Murley, Conestoga webmaster and podcast engineer. Looking forward to seeing you all at Conestoga 10. For more information, our web address is www.sftulsa.org or send an email to conestoga@sftulsa.org. Questions about our podcast may be sent to podcasts@sftulsa.org. Thank you for listening.